we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots. Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, we're chatting with Mike Thorwart, who serves on the Council Rock School Board as the school director for Council Rock Region 7, which covers Northampton Township. Mike's currently the vice president of the Council Rock Board, and as far as school directors go, he's been one of the most vocal and longest tenured supporters of getting kids back into school and keeping them there. Welcome to the podcast, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So my first question for you is, I feel like the whole meat and potatoes of the conversation, which is, what is it like to be a school board director through all this?
Well, Josh, nobody signed up for this when they signed up to be a school director or ran for a school director. I mean, the first time I was elected, I swore up and down. No one told me what an election would be like and how ugly they can be. But this has been
another level.
Another level. Not maybe. Well, there's ugly too, but not just ugly, but just another level of work and angst and stuff. But you know, we signed up for this, so you know, I don't want to paint myself as a martyr. I signed up for this twice, so yeah. It's mine.
Let's go back to that. I'm curious to hear, obviously, you're a sitting board member when COVID hits. So what was your experience like before COVID? I mean, why did you choose to run for the school board?
I wanted to get involved. I wanted to give back. We struggled with my older daughter with a single teacher, had some problems, nothing terrible, was resolved. But it got me involved with school board meetings, and I started attending. I actually attended school board meetings for years before I actually ran for a board seat. So when it was just turning the table, I knew how they worked. I'd been out in the audience for a long time, not talking all the time, but participating, listening, watching. So when I said I'm going to run, you know, that was the next, you know, it just kind of happened, you know, that way. So
yeah, you still at that point have kids in school, so you're gonna represent them on the board.
I had two kids in school when we started. I still have, my youngest son is still in school. He's a high school student at Council Rock. He will finish in 2023, right before my second term ends on the Council Rock School Board. So,
and where obviously we've just gone through an incredibly tumultuous time for school board directors. I can't imagine in the whole slew of things, other than maybe ICU nurses or, you know, specific very frontline situations, any job that has been more challenging with COVID than being a school board director. And it's not paid. It is.
Yeah. For those that think we make a lot of money doing this, the school district really struggles to even buy us coffee. Yeah. I mean, it because of ethics and sunshine laws, you know, we have a small board budget that pays for things like bottles of water but there's no pay. So.
And so you're in your second term now, and your second term has been defined in large part by COVID and everything you had to deal with there. Do you have eyes on what's going to happen after that? Are you planning to run again or definitely
no,
not?
No, I had promised my constituents in 2014 to 15 when I ran the first time that I am a firm believer in term limits. And my plan is to see this term out and stop. Part of me, you question sometimes, should I do it again? Is there still work to do? Is there work I'm suited for to do? But I'm tired, after this. Yeah. And if you ask my wife is tired of me doing it.
Well, that goes to something that I definitely want to make sure to tell all the listeners and have you explain. This job isn't just you show up at the school board meeting and get to make a decision and, you know, be the center of attention. There's a not in the spotlight element to it, that just tons of work. You got to review the documents the administration is bringing to you, look through all kinds of reports, attend committee meetings. What does all that look like? I mean, I guess let's start with before COVID. Your time investment, I'm sure, was a real challenge for family.
Well, yeah, we used to tell board members pre-COVID, you know, assume somewhere between 10 and 20 hours a week pre-work. before the meeting, you know, 10 or 20, depending on what you were doing. We redistricted at one point that flirted with 20. But, you know, there's effort to be involved, to do this right, to practice. Now, COVID came along, and we're trying to run a school district. And some of us, well, me at least, I'm trying to understand what's going on with COVID. Why are, you know, what is really going on? You know, and so, you know, I work all day, and then at night you'll see me sitting on the couch or sitting at this table with papers spread out and research. And I'm reading research articles on COVID. I'm not reading headlines. Early on in the COVID thing, you know, we had administrators that would come in and say, well, the CDC said this, or this article said this. And then you'd go to the article, and that was the headline. But then you'd go to the actual research, and it didn't really say that. And, you know, I mean, I have a degree, a couple of degrees in chemical engineering, so I'm not a medical professional, but I can read research papers.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time doing, I spent a lot of time last week reading the latest one from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And you know, and they don't, I don't like to bash people unless they're fighting with me, and you know, but some of these papers, I mean, I've seen middle school science fair projects that are better than some of the analyses that have been done on these papers. And that needed, I needed to know that to make my decision. It couldn't just be, if we follow the CDC, we still wouldn't be in school. So the CDC lags, I mean, I think, in a lot of this. They follow public opinion now, which is unfortunate because they, at one point, were a premier. You know, and now they've lost kind of some of their luster.
Yeah, there's been a definite ding to, I mean, trust in general.
Yes, for and that, and that's really what it is. It's trust, you know, it's so.
And so you as a school board director, I mean, we could talk about all the different ways that trust in public health has been damaged and what it meant. But for you as a school board director, that causes you to, like you said, when you see something or hear something that's coming from, quote, public health, you're going to then go and actually look into it rather than say, okay, you know,
I think
trust
we have
the experts.
To. I think we have to. You know, my wife will walk by, what are you doing? I'm teaching myself statistics again. You know, I have to, you know, and you know, that's not normal. You
know, and I was going to say, I've always kind of recognized from really early on, I mean, last school year when the big fight was just getting kids into the school buildings, you had an incredibly analytic approach to the whole thing, which I think is rare for school board directors. I'm trying to think through in my head right now, and like, I know John Kern has the same kind of engineering mindset up in Quakertown.
Yeah.
But by and large, that mindset of, look, I'm just going to dive into the papers, kind of reverse engineer what I'm seeing in the data, try to really understand what's going on, kind of rare. So on your board, how does that work? Do your colleagues kind of look at you as like, okay, you're going to be the one to break down data and look, you know?
Some do, some don't. Some would like me to say, look at this, you know, versus me telling them what it says. But again, it's better if you tell people, figure it out yourself, because then you've got a confidence level with it. So lately, though, I mean, I think I'm the only one that continues to look at we've got kids back in school, so I might be the only one that stays abreast of what's being published by different organizations. And it for me, it's merely so I can counter it if it's waved in front of me at public comment or by, you know, another board member. You know, I want to be able to talk about it. So
And it's, I imagine all of you are just exhausted at this point. How do you keep doing?
Keep going back to it. Yeah, I mean, normal school board meetings were an hour and a half, 2 hours pre-COVID. Sometimes they go long, but now, I mean, you know, it's rare for them not to be 3, 4, 5 hour meetings. You know, so and Council Rock school directors meet every Thursday, either in committee or in a board meeting, plus some, you know, plus special meetings and exec session. Anything labor related is done in executive session. It's not right to knowable. So it, you know, it's not public. So they happen and no one even knows. It's reported in board meetings, but you know, no one sees those hours.
So when you have to add up, let's talk about now in COVID, the last couple of years or whatever, when you add up all the time you have to spend working before meetings to prep, you're at the meetings for, like you said, these will go on for hours. You're answering constituent emails, all this. Mm-hmm. When you add up all of that job, are we talking like a full-time job?
It can be. It can be. And what has suffered for me in that as a school director is I used to answer every constituent email. I can't anymore. I mean, I'm starting to again because the numbers have, you know, but you could wake up to 200 emails in the middle of this. Yeah. And you know, and some of them were cut and pasted from one another. Some of them were, and I read every email, but the days of answering them, I hope comes back. I hope, you know, I because some people have genuine concern that I can help with, and others are just venting and just letting me know what their opinion is. And that's perfectly fair, but I can't answer them all anymore. So
you mentioned volume has started to go down a little. So, I mean, we're recording this episode. It's spring of 2022 and cases have come back down. Mm-hmm. CDC changed their guidance, I think a few weeks ago is what it is now. Mm-hmm. So largely it really appears that we're like kind of approaching some kind of an end. We'll see what happens in the fall, but I'm curious, has everything gone away from the perspective of the angst? And
no, I don't think it has. It's lessened. It has lessened. You know, Mr. Bilek, who was on the school board with me for many years, when he ended his term, he said he felt like he was in combat with some of us. And, you know, and that fight or flight mentality is, you know, we fought hard to get kids back to school. And it'll be a while till it leaves me. And it'll be a while until I'm actually certain that this is over. I'm not convinced that we are just going to go back to normal. We should, but I'm not convinced. I think there's a certain amount of population that can never let this go, or has too much invested in it now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I will continue to do my research as it slowed down. Yes. We have, you've seen in our meetings, we have a demographer coming in. It's going to predict where, and you know, I come from a place of data and modeling. So, and I commented to our acting superintendent, this is actually going to be fun. I mean, I'm going to take apart some piece of research and modeling from an outfit I respect, and it's not COVID.
Yeah.
it's not COVID, which will be really nice.
Finally doing something that is, you know, the job.
Yeah, yeah. And so.
And you mentioned it's almost like PTSD going through the experience. Mm-hmm. We've started to recognize, I mean, Kiri, myself, the other admins in Reopen Bucks, that it's almost like a responsibility we have to help people recognize just how much trauma has accrued. And this is on both sides. Feel like people who are afraid of the virus and did everything they could to mitigate, they have a lot of trauma to deal with because of that experience. And those of us on the other side, we have our trauma to deal with. So everybody is really changed for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to hear that there's that dynamic, as you describe it, of dealing with trauma from school board directors, where there's like a brotherhood with it, or a camaraderie to get through it.
Yeah. I mean, you'll see that. I mean, I as you pointed out, I'm the vice president. There is barely a day goes by where I haven't spoken at least for 10 minutes with the president of the school board. Is everything okay? There's barely a day where I haven't talked to one or two other board members throughout the day. I mean, it's the nature of the job. I mean, you know, not everything can happen with all nine of us sitting around a board table, you know.
Yeah.
There is one-on-one conversations that happen. They're allowed. It's legal. You know, I mean, I'm not doing anything nefarious here. It's just, you know, to keep schools running, you know, we need to know where things are going and how. And so,
yeah, it's a big team effort.
Yeah, it is.
It takes leadership.
It does.
As we've seen, leadership has been one of the most important aspects of this whole thing. It seems like the organizations and institutions that have good leadership have responded well to COVID and dealt with it and pivoted. There's a lot of institutions and organizations that haven't had good leadership and they've really struggled.
Mm-hmm. So, the only thing I would comment there and is, I used to say that if a superintendent wanted kids in school, kids would be in school. And I still stand by that, but there's even leadership above superintendents that can get in the way of, I mean, we saw it at statewide, federal wide. I mean, you're still putting a mask on an airplane. It's, you know, there are things that get in the way that even, you know, school directors and superintendents can't, you know, they can fight, but you know, our reach is kind of local. Yeah. In terms of what we can
do. Well, so let's get into, I guess, some of the details of what that has looked and felt like for you. So trying to think back over the last couple of years, I mean, the whole thing has been a slog. And you guys mm-hmm. have just worked your tail off the whole way through. But a couple of things that really stand out to me are, first and foremost, just getting kids back into school. Mm-hmm. So when we go back all the way to, like, you know, March, April 2020, mm-hmm. schools are shut down. We mm-hmm. still at that time, I don't know about you, but I kind of naively believed, hey, 2 weeks, you know, maybe until Easter, whatever. But, like, life is going to rapidly return to normal. We're not going to fundamentally change society, which we, I think, wound up doing. But as those weeks go by and it's obvious kids aren't going to go back to school in that school year, the first school year, what's going through your mind at that point?
Well, you know, the 2 weeks to flatten the curve thing started in March or April. And you'll find writings. I have had a Facebook page for as a Council Rock school director. I've kind of let it die because, you know, the first thing that happens when people disagreed with you during this is they tried to cancel you. So it just became too much work. But you'll see writings where I said over the summer, early in this, that, you know, flattening the curve doesn't change the number of people under the curve. It can't. It will spread out how long it takes to get there, and take that for what it's worth. But the math is, you know, a percentage of the population, and in my estimate, all of the population is going to be exposed to COVID. So all you're doing there is stretching it out a little bit.
Well, let's go back to the goal of that whole endeavor: 2 weeks to flatten the curve. The goal is to relieve the strain on the hospital system mm-hmm. so that mm-hmm. they can make it mm-hmm. and come through and have enough support.
Right.
At some point, that transition to let's keep schools shut down until there's no COVID at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really did. Well, it morphed multiple times. It was, we didn't know, so we closed schools. I can embrace that. That's a good thing. We didn't know, so we closed schools. Mm-hmm. Then it was, we'll flatten the curve for a little while. Okay, well, that got us through the spring of 2020. But after that, it morphed into, well, until we have a vaccine. And then it was, well, until so-and-so can have the vaccine. And you know, the last argument was, well, five-year-olds and younger need the vaccine. And at some point, if you're a parent, and you know, I am, I have kids at home. I watched my son and my daughter, who was ended up home for a year from college. You know, I don't want to say spiral into depression or anything, because they didn't. We as a family avoided that. But into isolation, yeah. I mean, you know, is an isolated teenager a good thing? You know, and that those are kind of the things that you saw in this. And then I'm, for the record, married to a teacher. I'm married to a high school math teacher in New Jersey. And I watched my wife work her tail off to try and have an impact on these kids. So you'll also find writings where I say separate teachers' unions from teachers, because they're two entities. They really are two different entities.
It always struck me as odd, come summertime, the big push was to pull back from full in-person school to hybrid situations. Mm-hmm. And in some cases where they could get away with no school at all, they mm-hmm. tried that. Mm-hmm. But from a union perspective, pushing for a hybrid model, I can't imagine what's harder for a teacher to pull off.
It's you're seeing with PSSA scores and such now, it's not educationally sound. And that stemmed from this notion of 6 feet separation. Kids don't fit. We didn't build schools to have 6 feet between kids. So I watched Teresa set up our sunroom. She had multiple computers, multiple monitors. We bought equipment for her so that she could, because some of her class was on Zoom and some of it was in school. And sometimes she was in school and sometimes she was home, you know, and it became, you know, and no matter how hard you work, teachers are trained to teach in a classroom. I mean, that's what they do, and that's what they do well.
And I feel like it comes down to the fact that we are not robots. When mm-hmm. we do things mm-hmm. like education and business mm-hmm. and healthcare, all of these institutions, these are human relationships that mm-hmm. are happening. Mm-hmm. And when you tear down the relationship, how does it not affect the outcome of the institution?
Yeah. And on kids, on children, I think it's amplified.
Right.
I think it does significant harm to children, especially you'll see it in the scores, middle schoolers, You'll see it in the scores of high school students. You see it in the scores with elementary kids, but it's different because they're already hamstrung because they're, you know, think about a first grader learning on Zoom. Oh, they can't even read.
You know, it makes me angry to go back to that.
Yeah. Those teachers, and I can tell you, those teachers worked hard at to do that. You know, I mean, COVID amplified. If you were good, you got really good. If you were bad, it really showed. I mean, there was no hiding from it anymore, you know, and that happened as part of this.
So in addition to the academic loss, something that is just now starting to be dealt with is behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. You guys, I assume, have that going on.
We see that too. We see that. I see it. I hear it from my wife who comes home. I can't mention names, but she has good days and bad, you know. Yeah, something was lost. Developmentally with this, it just got lost because they weren't in their peer groups for quite some time. And even when we brought them back to school, the distancing, the masks, in high school at Council Rock early on, the shortening of the school days, you know, they were in, they were out, you know, get in, do your thing, get out.
It goes back to the human activity of it. I can't help but feel like you made these kids lose some empathy to one another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Frustrating. So let's go back to 2020 and just getting them into school. I'm curious to hear. So that's all really good background to understand how you dealt with the beginning of it. And it sounds like you, by summertime of 2020, had some really strong opinions and conclusions on things. You get into that school year, and I can't recall the exact story of like when Council Rock went back, but what was that process like? I mean, did you at that point have, you know, colleagues on your board who were all ready to send them back? And it was kind of the way you think of it today, is almost like the school board having to work against the administration's wishes.
It was in the fall of 2020, we had a split board. So we had solid folks that wanted the kids back. We had folks that weren't going to send the kids back, you know, until the CDC gave the all clear, which, I mean, the CDC doesn't let you eat red meat. So, you know, rare meat. So I don't think the CDC is ever going to pull back everything. So it was a split board. It was an administration that firmly followed the state guidelines. You know, you would know as much as I do. I suspect the state licensing boards and certification boards came down hard on, you know, administrators to do that. And for some of them, that was that's what they wanted to do too. It wasn't safe.
You can totally see that when we go back, and obviously there's like right to know up the wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
You can totally see the difference from administrators who are thinking about the kids and those who are letting their own view of things cloud their work.
And that happens. And you know, we slogged through the fall, hybrid, virtual. Towards December, you know, push to, you know, open schools. But and I'll be frank, the first major push to open schools, I was a deciding vote to keep them closed, because we weren't ready. We as a district were not ready to welcome kids back. That was my fundamental mistake, because it cost kids another 6-8 weeks, maybe more, before they got them back. Had I had a chance to do it over again, I would have voted send them back and let it fail. I mean, I just let it.
And the failure, you're talking about the thing that the schools weren't ready. Was that like a staffing issue?
Well, staffing, prep. The buildings were closed for a very long time. You know, it just, nobody really was, you know, we kind of lurched and stumbled towards reopening schools. So,
like, it takes an operation to
run
a school.
Yeah, yeah. And restarting them in a non-standard way is like restarting any industry is hard. So, and I wanted to give the administration runway. But it probably did not serve our students well when I did that. So, and
I'm curious, as we go along here, you're talking about December and then into 2021. You know, as kids do get into school across all districts and everything, had you, in your role as a school board director, been exposed to or worked with the Bucks County Health Department and Dr. Damster and having those conversations?
We had early on in this basically a direct line to Dr. Damster. You could call him, he would answer, and he was talking to the superintendents throughout Bucks County. He had regular meetings with them. So Dr. Damsker and I do not agree on everything. He's a big fan of the vaccines. I am a fan of, I'd like 10 years worth of information on how they work before we inject them into children. But, you know,
terms of bringing the clinics into the schools.
And I just, we are different there, but, we shared a common goal, and I think still do, in that we all wanted kids back in school. We wanted kids back in school safely, but in school where they belonged and where they could learn. So, and Dr. Damsker deviates, I think, a lot from the CDC in that he and I think that children were never really at risk of COVID. And we're discovering that. I mean, you know, I dare a parent to tell me they've never met a child who has had COVID and recovered, you know. So
it's bizarre to think back on it that we're literally through all of last academic school year, the argument always was we need to be safe because they'll bring it home and give it to grandma. That was like widely accepted on both sides and understood as the argument. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere last summer, with Delta and everything, it transitioned to like, oh, we have to protect the kids. And now it's, like you mentioned before, it's goalpost shifting.
And I want to live in a world where children don't bear the burden of keeping adults safe. And I've said that publicly, and I'll tell it to you. I want to live in a world where children are not shouldering these heavyweights. I think that's for the adults to do. We have vaccines now. We have apparently unlimited N95 masks now for folks who need them, but it should not be on children. But yeah, Dr. Damsker, you know, it was great to be able to bounce ideas off of him, and you know, here's my opinions, and here's what I think, and you know, it started with he and I with PCR tests. And
oh, so testing for kids, that would wind up being one of his big sticking points in the whole thing. Even this school year, which has been a challenge, he was always firm that when it comes to kids, test them if they're sick. You don't need to be surveilling kids with testing healthy kids all the time.
And I talked about research. That was one of the first research jobs I did, was understanding PCR tests. And I almost want to put again on there, because I'm a child. I was in high school and college in the 80s during the AIDS epidemic. And there's some very familiar faces running things nationally now that were also running things nationally in the 80s. And so the PCR test was designed for HIV. And it's an extremely sensitive research tool. It was never built or designed as a medical tool for surveillance and stuff. Because, you know, depending on how you, and that's where I would talk to Dr. Damsker, depending on how sensitive you make it, and you can with those, you can find anything you want.
Oh, they were 40 cycle threshold for the longest time. You're going to find a lot of it. Now, you mentioned something in there with Dr. Damsker, that in that first year, as you're working to get the schools open, his accessibility, there was a tight line there. I obviously have been told many times, and I'm kind of the opinion based on hearing the story so many times, that this year that was so radically different. Has that been the case for you guys?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think if I needed him and I went through channels, he would be there for me. But his accessibility changed last fall. I mean, it really did. I mean, the goalposts shifted for whatever reasons last fall. I mean, and I have our current board president. There is a meeting somewhere where, you know, he told our superintendent, if you see Dr. Damsker, tell him I said hi. You know, I mean, that was one of those meetings where, you know, I wish him well. I think he means well for the kids. I wish he was in charge of the state's response. It would have been radically different.
Maybe he will be.
Yeah, maybe he will be someday. But you know, Dave's a good guy. I mean, he really wanted to do what was best for the kids. Yeah. And it turns out a lot of his early things that got him in trouble with the public.
Oh, they were all right. Modified quarantine, six versus three feet, all of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you look back on this current school year, which we're in 2021, 2022, not having him necessarily as involved, but knowing that he's there if you really need them, I'm curious to hear from Council Rock School Board perspective, and you guys have been just rock solid, one of the best, along with Central Bucks. Do you think that him not being there as much has changed things? Or were you guys like trained up, ready to fight? You knew what you had to do.
Yeah, Dr. Damsker early on gave us the tools. The ones that wanted them gave us the tools to do this. I mean, gave us the knowledge, gave us the tools, gave us the, you know, some of his guidance along the way. We, you know, it's all public, you know, and we knew what we had to do. So, by the time he sidelined or was sidelined, that's its own story. We were ready. I mean, we knew what I was ready. I knew what had to be done. So, and it amped my game up. I was, when I started on the board, considered the quiet guy. I just thought, gave an answer, was accused of not explaining why I voted certain ways and you know, turned into, you know, whatever this is. I'd like to go back to being the quiet guy that can just look at the numbers and data and you know, and do that. But, you know, I mean, I think Mrs. Marcel would tell you, you know, we are uniquely situated to handle this, you know, and it showed. It showed at Central Bucks too. I mean, it's we are uniquely situated to lead.
You use the word lead. It's so important to call out that what was done in these specific districts, you guys, Central Bucks, Penridge, it changed everything, because it's kind of like in some ways you dragged along the other districts that were maybe having problems getting there but wanted to.
Right.
Trailblazed.
It's fear. I mean, and fear is good and bad, but it's fear, you know, what ifs. But if you live by what ifs, you don't really live at all. And you know, with this pandemic, 2 years is a long time if you're six. If you're 6 years old, 2 years was a big chunk, you know. If you started like my son did as a freshman when this started, you haven't had a normal year of high school yet. Wow. You know, even this year, I wouldn't call it normal, although it's much better, you know, but we started off with masks and all that, you know.
And let's end with that. I'm curious to hear your take on, I mean, you have all the way until next year on the board. This school year, we're seeing rapid improvement now. Mm-hmm. And I think that both sides are finally ready to start like taking off their armor, setting down their swords and shields and going back a little bit. We'll see once cases spike in the fall who really sticks with that. But what do you think is going to happen?
I'm not convinced this is over. I want it to be over. It should be over. But I'm really not convinced it's going to end. I mean, there is... I've been accused of politics in here. I don't know why, because this my election time is over here. But there's an election coming up. And what was done to kids for 2 years is deeply unpopular. So I think it stays quiet right up till November. And I sincerely hope it stays quiet after that. I think the public, the community at large, should realize this was deeply unpopular. And now that the data is trickling in about what it did to test scores and behavior and stuff, it was also deeply troubling in terms of, you know, what could or could not
there was
be done.
Damage.
But,
there
yeah,
was done.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope it's over. I sincerely do. But I don't think, aside from tamping down on my research and stuff, I don't think I'm stopping until I'm sure it's over, which means it may take me right through 2023 before, you know, but I'd like to, after this long, give all the kids a normal school year, not a new normal, a normal school year. They need to go to dances. They need to play sports. They need to do everything they did before and socialize and not be quarantined over something that, you know, you know, because they sat next to someone who was sick. That you know, and that needs to stop too, and it is it is, but I don't think it's just because it stopped doesn't mean it can't come back, and that's my fear, and it'll stay my fear probably until we're done. That's the way I think, you know.
Yeah. So it's living in Bucks County is an interesting place, and I don't think I can put into words how impactful it is to have folks like yourself on these boards, the big influential important boards, Council Rock, Central Bucks, etc. I just got to say a huge thank you for being a part of the whole story, obviously being in Reopen Bucks, but doing everything you've done over the last couple of years for kids. I mean, it took a lot of bravery to put yourself out there as things were going on and take the arrows. I mean, I know what that feels like. You really, you take a lot of heat. So glad to hear it's starting to ease up a little bit.
It is. And you know, I mean, I said we had a split board. I you know, shout out to even some of the other board members who disagree with me. We're all trying to do what we think is best, you know, and you know, my frustration in board meetings have bubbled up more than once, but you know, nobody signed up for this. I'd have never thought local school boards were going to be, you know, the pointy end of the spear for all this stuff, but they were, and, you know, and it's rough. So, I'm grateful that school board's got visibility, and I'm glad people are paying attention. And, you know, I hope parents and communities continue to pay attention. Whether you agree or not, continue to pay attention. Yeah. So
thanks so much, Mike, for coming on. We'll catch you next time.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. See you, everybody.